We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 90 Town the Game. Very busy Thursday. The Atlanta Braves get set in front of a huge crowd expected this weekend, maybe near sellouts, all four games in a showdown series against the Washington Nationals tonight. Julio Teheran against Steven Strasburg begins a 12-game stretch between now and the end of the month where 10 of those games are going to be against the Nationals and the Phillies, and we could really see what the NL East race is going to be like by the 1st of August. We'll have a really good idea. And for Washington, a critical series, a critical time for them to make some hay here in Atlanta. Just one of the many headlines this morning. And Hugh, this series this weekend, Washington, we've been talking about it, got to come in. They got to be thinking 3 out of 4, if not sweep. And the Braves, likewise, say, if we just box them and punch them, 2-2 is a win for the Braves at this point.
Yeah, but you want to try to win the series, especially coming off that Milwaukee series. You want to try to win the series, John. And you want to put all doubt into the Nationals' mind. You want to make them think that they can't win this race. There's no way that you can run with us. That's going to be easier said than done, no question about that. But that's the kind of mentality that you have to have this second half of the season.
So the Braves will tee it up against the Nationals again tonight with Teheran against Steven Strasburg in the first of a 4-game set at SunTrust Park. That's just one of the many headlines. Today is the day the rookies report for the Atlanta Falcons. That's your first-round picks, their first day of training camp. That's today in Flowery Branch. So, Chris, all these guys showing up with all the rookie free agents, they report today. The veterans will report Sunday, and, of course, our live coverage begins live Monday at 6 a.m. Beginning Monday at 6, you need to be right here all week long for 8 days of training camp on Sports Radio 99 The Game as we cover training camp from Flowery Branch, wall-to-wall, 6 to 7 p.m., with John and Hugh, Andy and Randy, and Dukes and Bell. And as the rookies report today, Hugh, we get the good news that Deion Jones, this wasn't a negotiation. This was Drew Rosenhaus showing up yesterday, his agent, coming into Flowery Branch just to sign some docs.
Yeah, basically. So it makes you think that, this was something that had been a long-term negotiation. And Drew came in and got it done. It was not a whole lot of finagling, not a whole lot of heckling, I would not think, going back and forth. And another thing, they kept this thing under wraps. This thing was under wraps pretty good. So they got it done. And what that says to me is that they don't want anybody crying about no money going into this season.
Right. You get Grady done, and then everybody expected the next guy would be Jones. Just I don't think anybody thought it was going to be Deion because, Hugh, honestly, I'm not even really sure how much that was even on my radar.
It wasn't on anybody's radar, John. That was kind of like what I was saying is just that, we were talking about Grady. From everybody, from all the speculation that I've heard, we were talking about Grady. And we're talking about Julio. That's it.
Yep.
Deion came out of nowhere.
Got it done. $57 million over 4 years. And so Grady's done. Deion's done. Now we'll see what they do with Julio. And we'll talk with Joel Corey, who is a former agent at CBS Sports. He is their business and contract analyst. He has all the insight, what he had to say about these, what I think are two team-friendly deals and what's ahead for Julio Jones. We'll talk with Joel coming up at about 18, 19 minutes from now. We'll get his insight, and he can give us kind of fill in some of the blanks about these two deals and where the Falcons stand. But the really good news here is, at the moment, the Falcons are, the rookies are reporting today, Hugh. The veterans report on Sunday, and, short of Julio getting his deal done, which we all think is going to happen, he'll become the highest-paid wide receiver in the history of the NFL. He'll probably become the first receiver to touch $20 million a year. There's the kind of good thing is there's no real, at least as far as I could tell, no real issues with the Atlanta Falcons right now.
No, just got to get healthy. You're still worried about how long it's going to take Rico to come back and Keanu from their injuries and how soon they can get to as close to being what they were before they got hurt as they could possibly be. But as far as like anybody holding out for contract disputes or anything like that, no, you ain't got those issues. You got those kind of worries. You just got to go out there and play some football.
And, of course, we continue to follow that. Joel Corey will join us again. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll talk with the former agent about what is ahead for those guys. And also have to talk to Joel about those three potential holdouts, those long-term holdouts, Jadeveon Clowney, Melvin Gordon, and Zeke Elliott, and get his thoughts about contracts for all three, or will the Cowboys, Chargers, and Houston Texans be looking at protracted holdouts from three stars in the NFL? We'll do that ahead. Atlanta United wins 5-0 over Houston, shorthanded Houston last night. Atlanta United now moves back into sole possession of second place in the East in Major League Soccer, and will face DC United coming up on Sunday with a kick at 3:30 on Sports Radio.
Do they ever get their field fixed? No, they're coming here, right? Mm-hmm. DC's coming here.
Yeah, they're coming here.
Oh, so we ain't got to worry about that. I was just checking because they got a horrible pitch.
Wasn't it like a really bad rainstorm, cold rainstorm when we played up there early in the year? Wasn't that the case with DC? Because it was like two, right? Columbus and DC. That they played in just terrible weather, you know. I think so. Exactly. Yeah, the Columbus was that deluge game. That was ridiculous. No, but they'll be Mercedes-Benz Stadium Sunday at 3:30. Well, as we look up here, the final major of the year is underway, and the countdown now on to next month and the FedEx Tour Championship at Eastlake. And one of the big questions is, will we come into the Tour Championship with four different major winners? This year, you've already had three. Tiger won the Masters. Brooks Koepka won the PGA. Gary Woodland, the surprise winner at the U.S. Open. And now everybody favoring Rory McIlroy, who's had a good year. He won the Players' Championship. He won the Canadian Open. He's been on his game to go back home. He's from Northern Ireland. He knows the course, knows the area, grew up right there. And that Rory McIlroy was going to be the favorite. And he comes out immediately on his very first hole, tees the ball up, and just, hits it off the planet. Nobody could find it. Ends up with a quadruple bogey on the first hole and has been playing catch-up ever since his first tee shot as he makes the turn in round number one. So we're keeping our eyes on Rory, who's 3-7 off the lead at the moment. At the turn, Ricky Fowler is even par. Jordan Spieth has just teed off, and we're waiting in about an hour for Tiger Woods to begin. Now, Hugh, we know that Tiger did not play well at the U.S. Open. He did win the Masters. And we all thought, Eastlake last year in the Masters that he was back and he didn't play well. And it led a lot of people to say, I think what we have to expect is that Tiger's going to be I think the expectations of Tiger are somewhat unrealistic at his age.
I think that when Tiger does well, people want him to do well. So we always get excited, especially, after the one that he won. So that's basically what it is, John. We are still Tiger Woods fans, and we want to see Tiger Woods get back to the prominence that he once had. So every time that he's in it, we're going to raise the bar for him, whether he's on his game or not. That's the expectation that we have for Tiger Woods right now, and I just think that's just how it's going to be until Tiger Woods decides to hang it up. He's always going to have a faction of folks that are always just going to, if he's in it, they're always going to root for him just because it's him.
Right, and that includes me. I'm a gigantic Tiger fan, always have been since
Tiger,
I first
Tiger
met him.
Tiger Woods, y'all.
I met him when he was 16 years old. I mean, I've always been a fan of his. And, notwithstanding, there are people that still hate him, that will always hate him. Feel whatever way you want about him. I'm just telling you that I'm a gigantic fan and always will be, regardless of everything else. And I will go home today, and I will turn the TV on, and I will, watch him on the back nine and root for him like crazy to do in this tournament. But it does strike me again that we're kind of, if you're golf, you're kind of stuck. For a period of time, Rory McIlroy was doing very, very well. For a period of time, Jordan Spieth was doing very, very well. And yes, for this period of time, Brooks Koepka is doing very well. But Brooks Koepka doesn't move the meter. I'm sorry, Hugh, he just doesn't.
Nobody likes him. He's not a guy that people look at. He's not a story. But heck of a golfer, focused dude. Like, one thing that I've read about him, very, very focused, very, very focused individual. But as far as a great storyline and which we always look for in the business that we're in, he's just not that.
Yeah, the biggest storyline outside of the fact that he's good is his Instagram model girlfriend. And whether or not he kisses her before the round, it seems like everybody follows him. Because, she dissed him, and what was it, the Masters? Before the final round, it was either the Masters or the PGA, where she it may have been the PGA, where they're walking out of the clubhouse and she was mad at him for something, and he's going to the first tee, and then it may have been the PGA where he actually won, and she kind of like cold shouldered him and did something and became like a meme.
She gave him no sugar.
Yeah.
She gave him no sugar.
And so the last time they're like, Jenna Sims kissed him. Is it all good? So, that's kind of the only way he kind of registers outside the golf world. Inside the golf world, if you're a golf fan, you're going, yeah, Brooks is a great player. He's a nice guy. That's fabulous. But you've got to register, Hugh, as you know, golf needs you to register with the masses. You can't just register inside that bubble.
for me, in the bubble that I live in, it has not always been like that. It kind of got like that for me and my peers when Tiger started to play. And you know, because his dad was very, very braggadocious on his young son at the time. And he was saying stuff that people, when he said it, people looked at him, Earl, and was like, you know, you tripping about yourself. But everything that he said came to fruition for the most part. And so that's what enamored people about Tiger. And then, you know, people, he brought golf to the masses in my generation. That's how I look at Tiger, and that's how I see him. Tiger brought guys to golf that normally wouldn't have played golf and are still playing golf to this day. I think that's the Tiger Woods effect. And if golf is looking for that next guy, that next guy is not out there yet. He's not, that's not him. I mean, and I know that with Tiger, that's what a lot of people are looking for. And if you're trying to make Brooks Koepka that guy, he's not that guy. He's not going to bring golf to the masses the way that Tiger did. Tiger is a polarizing figure in the sense that, like you said, whether you like him or you hate him, that's it. That's the bottom line with Tiger Woods. But you cannot deny his prowess out there on the golf course.
Well, the two moments that he's given us here, Hugh, in the last year, that moment at Eastlake, which was a special moment for him to win that tournament. And I felt so bad for Justin Rose, was the guy that won the FedEx Cup, and he won $10 million. But it was like, oh, yeah, oh, that's right, Justin Rose won $10 million. Justin, come over here. We almost forgot about you. That's the impact of Tiger winning the tournament event of that of the Tour Championship last year. And then he goes out, Hugh, and he wins, of all things, the Masters.
Yeah, but Tiger's relatable. I think that's the biggest thing that makes Tiger so relevant, is that he's relatable. Because you look at the things that he's been through in his life, his personal life and his life on the golf course, there's something that you can relate to Tiger Woods with when you see him play. And I think that's why people root for him the way that they do. And that's the reason why people are always going to go out there. And when Tiger's out there, if he's in the lineup, they're going to always root for him because they want to see him do well, because he's the American dream. You know, you go out there, you have all the success, you fall on your face, and you bounce back. That's the American dream right there. Bottom line. I mean, that's how it is. That's what people like to see. Either you're watching him to watch him succeed, or you're watching him to watch him fail. That's what it is. Because you want to be right about whatever, however you feel about him, you want to be right. Yeah, so that's why he's polarizing.
And for people of a certain age, fans of a certain age like you and I, there was kind of a double, you know, as Tiger fans, kind of a double win here when Tiger won at Eastlake and then won at the Masters. And it was not now for the young fans, Hugh, who are in their, say they're in their 20s, who don't know about what Tiger was, right? And only heard stories about Tiger Woods and about his dominance, to have them have a taste of what we, and this is a little taste of the dominance for that, how long did, you know, that 12-year run or so where he was as popular a sports figure as there was on the planet before his downfall, superstar. Golf had a superstar. That was the difference, a superstar. And for them to get a little taste of that and understand that, yeah, this is what we were talking about with how great this guy was, is kind of neat. Now let's see if he can make it two majors, because if he can come out today and post a number, if he can make a run at this, Hugh, and win a second major, he could possibly be player of the year again.
Maybe. I just saw, and it's funny that you mentioned that, John. I just saw that was something I haven't seen in a long time. Tiger Woods doing a commercial. I don't know exactly what the commercial was, but I saw him on television doing some commercial. So, I mean, he's starting to get his swagger back a little bit.
Hey, you can join Andy and Randy, who are coming up top of the hour. You can join them Saturday, the midday show, broadcasting live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead, noon to 3. That's Twin Peaks in Buckhead, Saturday, noon to 3. Hang out with the guys and enjoy all that craveable man food at Twin Peaks in Buckhead, noon to 3, with Andy and Randy on Saturday. Next up, Joel Corey, former agent. We're going to ask him about Deion Jones' deal, Grady's deal, what we can expect in a Julio deal. And are there going to be long-term holdouts from those NFL stars? We're going to get the inside information from CBS's lead analyst about all these things. He's going to join John and Hugh as we continue on The Morning Show on this very busy Thursday on Sports Radio 99 The Game and 99thegame.com after a CBS Sports Minute.
Tight end, two receivers right, one receiver to the left. Ingram in the backfield with Breeze. Snap to him. Breeze shoots it. End zone intercepted! Oh, my goodness!
Deion Jones.
I don't really think about that, to tell you the truth. Just a matter of just enjoying the time that we had together and the connection that we made through ball. We really believe in the brotherhood, and the time I have with these guys has been great so far, and I don't want it to end.
Well, he's not going to have it end. That was actually last month from Deion Jones, and it's not going to end so much. He's got a new four-year contract that extends him to 2023 and $57 million more coming his way. And number 45 is going to be in the middle of the linebacking core before the Atlanta Falcons for the next at least 4 years. Welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the Game. And a deal that many of us, as we discussed, Hugh, did not see coming. We saw Grady Jarrett and the potential. Well, we weren't sure that Grady was going to get a deal done, that he might have to play under the tag. But we knew about Grady and Julio. We just didn't, at least I didn't know about Deion, which I'm glad they did it, though. Let's welcome into the program. Man knows a little bit about contracts. He was an agent at one time. He is now the lead analyst for CBS Sports on contracts and such. And he is Joel Corey, and he returns to the show this morning. Morning to you, Joel.
Good morning.
So, Joel, I have a question. Did this Deion Jones deal help speed along Grady Jarrett's deal in some kind of way?
No, because Grady Jarrett had a natural ending date. You had to get something done by July 15th or you weren't getting a deal done.
Mm-hmm.
So that had more to do with why Grady Jarrett's deal was done. That it's either you do him now or he's got to play the whole year because of franchise tag, long-term deal deadline, and then go through this whole thing next year, or either let him hit the open market if you didn't want to put a franchise tag on him for $18.25 million.
And with that being said, how did this Deion Jones deal fly under the radar and nobody was talking about it? How they pull that off?
Well, because they were talking about a Jones deal that everyone said would get done, but hasn't gotten done yet in Julio. But from a timing standpoint, this makes more sense because there's more urgency because Deion Jones is a contract year. Julio has 2 years left. I know there's the promise that Arthur Blank made, but absent the whole promise that was made last year to get Julio in the training camp, we would have been talking about this deal a lot more than Julio's.
Talking with Joel Corey, former agent. He is the contract and legal kind of sports contract legal analyst for CBS, and he has been part of the show before, and we're talking to him about some of these contracts here for the Atlanta Falcons. Both the Grady deal and the Deion Jones deal seem to be somewhat team-friendly. Am I wrong about that?
I don't know if I'd characterize it that way because I always thought Grady's deal would end up at $17 million per year. You got the highest two interior guys are Aaron Donald, and if you compare yourself to Aaron Donald as Grady Jarrett, I'm telling you that we can't have a serious discussion until you stop that. Because nobody's Aaron Donald. And then Fletcher Cox. So it comes in right behind there. And coincidentally, the guy who did Grady Jarrett's deal, Todd France, did those two deals. So I figured he was probably going to slot it somewhere around Fletcher Cox, maybe a little below, maybe a little above. So it's about where it should be. And then with Deion Jones, I look at it that C.J. Mosley deal was considered to be an outlier. And it wasn't a focal point of these discussions. And the deal that was Quan Alexander, who came in at 13.5, which was considered what people thought be a natural increase in the market until C.J. Mosley's deal just totally reset it. And the same guy who did Quan Alexander's deal, Drew Rosenhaus, the Deion Jones' deal.
Talking with Joel Corey about the deals for the Atlanta Falcons. So give me your best guess on Julio Jones and the deal. Does he become the first $20 million wide receiver? Does it get done soon? Or if you're looking at what the Falcons have done with the last couple of days, is it something that, notwithstanding the impact of the team here, is it something that will drag along?
Well, I'm going to use an analogy from last year's situation. Last year, it took forever to get Aaron Donald's deal done, and that Todd Gurley deal came in out of nowhere. So part of it, the delay there was Aaron Donald's demands. I know Julio Jones said he doesn't care about being the highest paid wide receiver, but Jimmy Sexton probably does. And from comments I read, reading between the lines, makes it seem like that Julio Jones isn't micromanaging this thing. So, yeah, I think when it does get done, he's going to be the first $20 million per year wide receiver. That is if Michael Thomas doesn't beat him to it. If Arthur Blank doesn't get a deal done with him, then you're probably going to have a major problem with Julio Jones, because then he's going to be thinking, you broke my promise. You broke the promise you made to me.
With that being said, you know, you're talking about these deals being done and Julio having 2 years left on his deal. Grady Jarrett and Deion Jones both did four-year contracts. Was there any thought process behind the four-year deals?
Yeah, they're both young guys. And considering you don't have fully guaranteed contracts, and we see in the NBA now that you can only do 4 and 5 year deals, shorter is better. So if you can continue to play well, you're going to get another bite of the apple when you still are in a position to command big money. Because if both these guys play well, then they're getting an extension coming into their contract year. So, yes, it made sense for these guys to give up no more than 4 new years.
Joe Corey joining us. Joe, I want to go back to what you just said about Julio. You know, you talk about the Julio and Arthur Blank and the promise that he made, and we know that Julio came out and had that comment, a couple of weeks ago on TMZ, where he said, you know, Arthur Blank told me Falcons for life, and his word is gold. His word is golden, I think is the term that he used here. What would be the holdup here? I mean, if everybody thinks he's slotted at $20 million, what exactly would be the holdup? Is it the amount of the signing bonus, or you know, what would structurally be the issue to not getting a deal done with Julio if everybody kind of knows what he's worth?
Well, there's $20 million, and then there's $20 million. So in football, everything is a guaranteed money. So I would think that the guaranteed money might be a bigger issue than what the overall dollars are going to be, because you could make him pay him like Matt Ryan. But if it's not secure and it's very team-friendly, that's meaningless. So in the NFL, since the contracts are barely worth the paper they're printed on because of the lack of full guarantees, that's everything, the guaranteed money and how front-loaded the contract is.
Joe Corey, a contract expert, former agent here. Joel, I mentioned in the tease coming into your segment, three big stars, Jadeveon Clowney, Melvin Gordon, Zeke Elliott, all not happy with their current contracts, all threatening to hold out, and in the case of Jadeveon, threatening a long-term holdout, maybe all three threatening long-term holdouts. Do you see these being long-term situations, and who do you see getting the deal done first? What do you see of Clowney, Gordon, and Elliott?
Well, Clowney can't get a deal done right now as a franchise player. He's filed a grievance to be classified franchise-wise as a defensive end as opposed to an outside linebacker, because that's a higher number by about $1.2 million. It's determined by the number of the position where it took the most snaps the previous year, and NFL Management Council initially sets position. I expect him in at the beginning of the season. What Bell did last year, hadn't happened in 20 years, sitting out a whole year under a franchise tag. Now is the second one. I don't see him walking away from what could be a little under 16 or a little over $17 million, depending upon the grievance. What I would do if I'm him, it hasn't been done in about a decade, to sign the tender, which probably won't be anytime soon, I would want a clause added to it where you couldn't put a franchise or transition designation on me in 2020. Lance Briggs and Albert Haynesworth had clauses like that. When they were franchised, they had to actually earn it based on their play time. But that's something you could do, and that would ensure that that Clowney is going to be able to get his true value next year if he can get one of those.
Now, Joe, when he went to the Houston Texans, Jadeveon Clowney, that is, his designation has always been linebacker. Now, if you were his agent, wouldn't you have tried to make this argument a little bit sooner than you've made it? Because he's kind of like behind the eight ball now.
Yeah, I would have filed the grievance a lot sooner. Last year they reached an agreement where they paid him kind of in between the fifth-year option for a linebacker and a defensive end. You've only had one grievance on this particular issue once. It was, I think, in 2008. Terrell Suggs made the same argument. It never got decided because they settled without the issue being determined at a hybrid tag, a hybrid defensive and linebacker tag. So I don't know if that's the play this time around, but the fact they don't have a GM also complicates things in terms of when you could have gotten him done for on a long-term deal.
Joel, excuse me, but I want to go back to that original question about Zeke Elliott and Melvin Gordon. Any chance either of those is a protracted issue?
Oh, funny you should mention those, because that's my article on CBS this week about those two guys. Ezekiel Elliott has more leverage than Melvin Gordon. Stephen Jones said he is the straw that stirs the drink. He's the focal point of the offense. They have been through this situation a generation ago when they had a running back that was a focal point of the offense. They made him hold out into the regular season as defending Super Bowl champs. They went 0-2 and found out how much they needed Emmitt Smith. If the Jones remember that, then if he does hold out, that may prompt them to do something sooner rather than later in not San Diego, L.A. You got Austin Eckler, who isn't too shabby. He's not Melvin Gordon, but he is part of what some people think is one of the better tandems in the running back tandems in the NFL. So you're better able to weather the storm without Gordon as opposed to Ezekiel Elliott. Also, here's something a lot of people probably aren't thinking about. The teams hate establishing contractual precedent in any way. So caving into a holdout would be one they don't want to do. And their fear is if you do it, then other people are going to come behind and expect the same treatment. The guy I expected for the Chargers, the first-round pick, to have a holdout at some point on his veteran deal is Joey Bosa, because he had one on his rookie deal over language issues, not money. He'll be in the same position that Gordon's in right now contractually next year. So I'm sure that is on the mind of the Chargers, that they're sending a signal if we give in to the demands of Gordon, that if the Bosa thing is acrimonious like it was the last time, then they're going to know that if they hold their ground, they have us.
Well, that'd be really interesting to watch on both cases. I know the Cowboys fans a little bit nervous with Zeke Elliott potentially holding out, and we'll see how these play out for these three teams, the Texans, the Chargers, and the Cowboys. Joe, we really appreciate your taking a few minutes. Thanks very much for filling in some of the blanks here on these contractual issues. It's always a pleasure having you on.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys, anytime.
Thank you, Joel. Joel Corey joining us again. He has his column up, as he said, on Zeke Elliott, Melvin Gordon, on CBSSports.com right now, so you can check that out at CBSSports.com. Hey, the Braves have made a pitching change tonight. Julio Teheran is not starting. We'll tell you who is and why next with John and you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9TheGame.com.
Atlanta Sports Radio.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We've got something to prove. That's not confidence. That's just wanting to prove it.
Training camp is about to begin.
Listen in as we give you exclusive coverage from Flowery Branch.
Our Falcons play here.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
He'll get it. I mean, I say the stuff is too good not to be really successful. And you're going to have games like that, and he'll be, you know, he'll learn from it, and going forward, he'll be better for it.
That was Brian Snicker from earlier in the year talking about Kyle Wright. After Kyle Wright got rocked in one start, he was sent back down to AAA, where in his last five starts, Kyle Wright has been pretty darn good at Gwinnett. And as a result, the Atlanta Braves here in the last few minutes, according to Mark Bowman of MLB.com, the Atlanta Braves have made a scheduling adjustment to their pitching staff for this Washington series. And Kyle Wright is going to get the ball and start tonight for the Atlanta Braves. They scratched him at Gwinnett last night, so he will pitch tonight. And Kyle Wright will start against Steven Strasburg for the Atlanta Braves this evening. Julio Teheran will be moved back to Friday with Mike Soroka Saturday. And now we're also hearing from Bowman that Kevin Gausman could be back on Sunday. So, Hugh, it could be Kyle Wright tonight getting a little guidance now, because we talked earlier about how, you know, there was a couple of openings in this rotation at the moment. It sounds like it could be Kyle Wright, Julio Jones, Mike Soroka, and Kevin Gausman.
Julio Jones can pitch too, that boy.
Oh, now Julio Teheran.
No, that's cool. I knew what you meant, John. I was just picking
this
fun.
I wrote down Julio, and we were just talking.
No, that's fine. Right. I mean, I knew what you meant,
too
John.
Many guys
I'm pretty sure everybody else did too. I was just poking fun.
Well,
but no,
yeah, Devontae Freeman at first base. Yeah.
That you done?
Yeah.
it wasn't that serious. everybody messes up. I do it every day.
You made me forget my train of thought. What were you about to say?
You were talking about Ulia Tehran.
No, I'm saying I was about to say something about Kyle Wright, but I forgot we went through all of that. But no, I mean, here's an opportunity. Here's an opportunity, and you should try to do the best to take full advantage of it.
Yeah, right. No, absolutely true. And it does make me wonder if I got another little wonder here, Hugh, that I'm gonna add this in, and then I'm gonna wonder. Okay, so Bowman's also saying the Braves are set to activate Ender Inciarte by Sunday. All right, so Ender could be back with the ball club.
Yeah, how many days you got to go before the trade deadline?
Yeah, that's what I was just looking at.
No, I'm
at.
Just saying.
13.
Because, yeah, you got some time. You want to showcase some guys. Maybe that's what the Braves are doing right now.
Exactly. Are they going to be showcasing Kyle Wright? Because a lot of teams are going to ask for something, you know, and Kyle Wright could be showcased tonight.
Yeah, I mean, we know this. We know that that's the case. Or, you know, or it could be one of those things where, okay, Kyle, show us what you got. Show us what's going on.
Right, so
if you could, you know, you're on the big stage in this moment, what can you do for us? Can you give us let's be realistic here. Can you give us six innings of four hits, maybe one run? Am I being or in the segment, am I being a little bit too over the top to ask for that tonight? Is that too much to ask?
That's a quality start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, is that too much
to ask?
Start.
I don't think that's too much to ask.
And you got to have that kind of a start because you're going up against Steven Strasburg.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, the pitching matchup does not favor us. I mean, no question about that. But if you could do that, that's a quality start. That's something you could sink your teeth into because their bullpen is atrocious. They're atrocious.
And so with Kevin Gausman returning, which is good news, And we said this earlier, of those three, of Foltynewicz and Gausman and Newcomb, now, of course, one's returned. Another one is on his way back, apparently. Newcomb's back with the team. Here comes Kevin Gausman. And you need one of those three, if not two of those three, to kind of hit and be the pitcher. Like, we need Kevin Gausman to be the Kevin Gausman of the second half of last season. You know, you really need that. Otherwise, you're showcasing Kyle Wright. You're bringing Ender back. You got Johan Camargo out there. You're trying to see about pieces out here. If you have to make a move, these are names that are going to come up, right? I mean, it's going to be, you know, how are you, Atlanta Braves, on Johan Camargo, on Ender Inciarte, on Christian Pache, on Kyle Wright? I mean, because that's, you know, the names that if you're looking at a frontline starter or a frontline reliever, those are the names that the other team is going to bring up. We all understand this. Now, before you say, we're not trading Christian Pache, well, again, it depends on the deal that you get done. It depends on who we're talking about and what you're offering and things of that nature when you're thinking about what the Braves have to be thinking about, which is nothing less than right now winning the World Series. I can't worry about Christian Pache next year. Do I want him to start in center next year? Yes. But I can't worry about that.
Yeah, you can. I mean, they've kind of made that clear. I think he's off the list. I think that this has to be something where it has to be you can't mortgage the future. I think that's the one thing that I remember specifically about that meeting that we had with the Atlanta Braves a couple years ago that they made clear. They made that crystal clear. You know, they understand the position they're in as far as what they have now, but what does that mean for the future, you know? And I know you got Acuña playing center field right now, but still, Pache, he's one of the guys that you're looking at, John, to be out there for you. He's one of the cornerstones of your future.
Yeah, I know. I hear about this. It's actually kind of an interesting question that you bring up. I'm less concerned about mortgaging the future than mortgaging the now. I think you can't mortgage the now. In other words, you cannot pass this opportunity up. This is what you have built,
and that's what I was about to try to, you know, put together. It's like you have a good lineup. You have a good hitting lineup right now. You have a good offense. Your offense is pretty good. You could probably line that up and play with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest issue that you have is your bullpen, correct? But you have a bullpen that has one of the lowest ERAs in the National League, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is it good enough to beat the Dodgers? Right now, people probably would say no. But going into it, and think about it like this. You know, everybody's playing the sabermetrics game now. That's a pretty good stat to have on your side going into, say, you going into the World Series matchup with the Dodgers. I know I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. We're going to the playoffs with the Dodgers. That's not a bad metric to have on your side.
Oh, no, the bullpen in toto has been good. But
in
there is a glaring hole, okay? And that glaring hole is that we are now almost 100 games into the season, and there is no closer on this team that I see that I would trust in a lockdown game in a postseason.
Yeah, you're right. But the stat that I just gave you, and knowing the way that baseball is trending, that's something that when you look at it, I'm just saying, as management is concerned, and if as the Braves are concerned, that's a pretty significant stat. When you talk about all the other teams that you could potentially see in this lineup, this is what I'm saying, John. If you weather the storm, if you could weather the storm, say you're playing the Dodgers, you weather the storm against that pitching staff that they have, and you can get to their bullpen, if you got just enough starting pitching, good pitching, that could keep you in the game, and you get to their bullpen, you got a shot. Because your bullpen statistically is better than theirs. That's what I'm saying. And they might be looking at it like that.
And they may. And this we talk about, you know, showcasing Kyle Wright. They may not be showcasing Kyle Wright. They may be looking at Kyle Wright and saying, you know, Kyle's got a chance here in a couple of starts to earn that fifth start, and maybe we don't have to make a move at all. I totally get it. And by the way, they may not. They may be able to get somebody without Christian Pache. Right?
Stand my crown. I like this song. This was in, what's that, the movie with the cows?
Movie with the cows?
The movie where the cow was singing. This was his dad's theme song. Oh, y'all don't watch enough cartoons in your life. I got it. Rockabilly? Was it Rockabilly? No, the movie with the cow. The dude was a cow. And his dad was, this was his dad's theme song. Forget both of y'all. How about that? Right. You know what, Abe?
I don't know
trivia as much as you think you do, brother. That's all I got to say about that.
And I know this guy passed way too soon in life.
No, right. It's not the scene. It's going to come to me in the break. I'll bring it back once I find it.
Andy Randy. Top of the hour on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.